This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So our next guest is a two-time Big Ten Player of the Year, first-team All-American at Ohio State. His number 22 is retired and hangs in the rafters in Columbus. He was the 1992 College Player of the Year and a 14-year NBA veteran playing for 12 teams. He's now a Westwood One analyst as well as NBA, college basketball, and all things in between. Jim Jackson joins us here on the show. Jim, good morning. How we doing?
Good morning. I'm good, man. The weather is not too bad here in Minnesota, so it's good.
Jim, we were here for the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Well, that's a different time of year.
I had to wear, I mean, remember the Christmas Story snowsuit that the little brother, Ralphie's little brother, is in? I had a snowsuit like this in all types of layers. I could not move. It was like seven below all week.
Welcome to Minnesota. Beautiful in the summer, though.
Yeah. No question. Yeah. And now it's actually kind of nice.
I know. It's not bad today.
I was happy with this. Yeah, anything above 20, I was very happy
there
with
you.
Jim Jackson joins us here from Radio Row. What are your memories of playing, you know, in March Madness, and when you watch the March Madness that we now see compared to where you were 25 years ago?
It's catch 22, because I can remember my freshman year when we made it, you know. So you see the on TV when the teams are kind of waiting to see if their name gets announced. Well, that was us at Ohio State my freshman year, because previous to that, it's been a drought in regards to us going to the tournament. And we had some tough losses at the beginning of the year, but then throughout the Big Ten season, we won some games. So that first initial feeling of, yes, we made it. And we didn't care where we went, who we played. We went all the way to Utah and played Providence the first game. And unfortunately, we played UNLV the year in 91 when they won it. But that feeling of excitement of, one, being selected to play was just unbelievable. Then, two, the first time when you're able to practice and do everything and the fans are there and to play in March Madness, just phenomenal. Now, fast forward it, my junior year, we're number one seed, beat Michigan twice that year, Elite Eight, got a chance to go to the Final Four, and we lose to them in overtime, okay, the Fab Five. And, you know, they play the game on ESPN Classics every now and then. For some reason, I keep hoping for a different ending, but it doesn't change. So it's the up and down, because you know at the end of the day, there's only one team that's going to be happy. But the whole experience itself has just been phenomenal. And I'll take it a step further, being able to cover and watch my son play when he played at Wisconsin, when they had back-to-back Final Fours and played a national championship game, that gave me a different experience. So I've been through the player, the parent, the analyst, you know, all these different ranges of emotions. But the common theme of it is, it's nothing like it.
Westwood One analyst Jim Jackson joins us here on the show. Your incredible career has intersected with so many great teams and great players, both college and the NBA. So I just want to kind of do some quick hits and get your thoughts on some guys and some teams. Let's start in college.
Now, you do know that, for me, it's not 6 degrees of separation. It's like 1.5.
It might be 1 degree.
Yeah,
I mean, seriously,
maybe.
Your career intersects with so many amazing players and teams. Number one, that 91 UNLV team. What was your take on one of the great college teams of all time?
Unbelievable. I mean, at that time, too, with Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony and Stacey Augman, those Anderson Hunt, those guys were just phenomenal. I mean, unbelievable. And, again, at that time, you were, you know, a junior, senior. These guys were mature, okay? They knew how to play. I mean, just that team, you can put them up with any team that is, you know, currently playing now or played in the past is one of the best.
Without back injuries, Larry Johnson's a Hall of Famer, no doubt.
No, he still should be.
Yeah.
Just what he accomplished before that.
92, you play against the Fab Five. Mm-hmm. What was your thoughts on that team?
You know what? A lot of people give him a bad rap at the time as, like, thugs or whatever. Unbelievable group of young men. I mean, really close friends of mine to this day. I mean, what they did for college basketball is they kind of changed the dynamics of how you view young men at that time, at 18 years old, 19, that could play on that level. Okay, they had a swag about them. They had an attitude that was good. A lot of people didn't understand that Steve Fisher did an outstanding job with those young men at the time. And I hated that we lost to them, but at the same time, I respected what they were able to accomplish.
Jim Jackson joins us this morning on the show. You played for a very short time for the New Jersey Nets. That's when Cal was there, right?
That was my man.
What was your take on John Calipari?
I love Cal because Cal just gave me the ball and said, "Get out the way." I had my only two triple doubles in the NBA with Cal, you know. But at that time, if Cal was to, you know, do it now, the way the league is, he's more built for the league today than he was back in the mid '90s. Okay, because he was just learning, and the league was a lot older. But I enjoyed my time with Cal, and we laugh about it a lot when I see him now when I cover some games.
97-98. Allen Iverson.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. Competitor. I mean, I don't care. It's one of these guys that I don't care if he's hurt, tired. It didn't matter. He was going to compete at the highest level. I mean, the heart and the will to compete and win is unmatched.
In 01 in Cleveland, was Sean Kemp on that team?
No, missed him.
I would love to know somebody that played with Sean Kemp. Yeah. What they thought about him.
No, he was a year ahead of me in high school, okay. So I got to know him then, but I didn't get a chance to play with him.
Miami, 01-02, Alonzo Mourning's intensity.
That's one of my best friends. I mean, we go back to high school. He's a year older than me, came out with Sean Kemp, met him at Nike camp, played with him. We were in the same draft in 92, played with him at Miami. Unbelievable competitor. Unfortunately, he's a slow golfer. So when I go play with him, I'm like, Brooke, you know, we got like a 4-hour window here that we need to get this done.
He's very deliberate about everything.
And that's because he's so intense and wants to win. Okay, but one of my best friends, unbelievable competitor, but even more so, a bigger heart. The things that he's done for the city of Miami and those kids down there, it's amazing.
His legacy off the floor, and his legacy on the floor is amazing. His legacy off the floor in the community is unmatched.
They got a school. He and his wife have a school named after him. All the things that they do down there, and he doesn't promote it in regards to me.
Yeah.
He knew it was a void that needed to be filled, and instead of waiting for somebody else to do it, he gathered all of his resources, not just money, but resources to try to address some of those issues.
He's an amazing, amazing person beyond a basketball player. You played in Houston 03-04. Stevie Franchise there?
Oh, yeah.
What was your thoughts on Steve Francis?
I love Steve. I mean, he was complicated from this perspective that he kind of butted heads with Jeff Van Gundy at the time because Jeff wanted the point guard to play a certain way. But heart of gold, man. I mean, some things didn't go right with him after he left Houston to Orlando to New York. But I enjoyed my time playing with him at Houston.
05-06, Steve Nash?
Unbelievable.
Was Nash at his peak.
Yes, MVP year. And he got it next year, too. Unbelievable. I saw Steve dissect. We were playing Golden State, and I was coming off the bench. And that first quarter, the first 5 minutes, he dissected the defense just magically. I was just sitting there in awe. Coach was calling me to get in the game. I'm spaced out watching Steve. I mean, and what's even better, forget the basketball, it's the player. Okay, the person is unbelievable.
And finally, 06, Kobe.
Mamba mentality. That's all I can say. Ultimate competitor, bro. Ultimate. I mean, they're locked in, zoned in. I'm going to give you even one 6 degrees, Tony Bennett. We played on the Pan Am team together in 1991.
No way.
So that's my guy. So
A
few years ago, I was covering him with Westwood One, and I brought out this picture of our group. Grant Hill was on that team, Christian Leitner, Tracy Murray, Walt Williams. So I brought the picture out. We're all in Cuba. And he started dying laughing.
I got to write a book with you. It's going to be called The Jackson Five. It's going to be 5 degrees of every one of these unbelievable stories and stars and teams that you played alongside.
I've been blessed, man.
What a cool life.
It's been tough to play. You know, you'll play for 12 teams. But the beauty of it is the people that I've been able to meet, the cities I lived in, have just been phenomenal for me. And I never would have been able to meet and do some of the things I've done if I didn't have that kind of path. Everybody's path is a little bit different. Mine was to go that way, which sometimes from a basketball perspective, you don't get the most out of your talents because of that. But at the same time, the friendships I was able to create is unbelievable.
What a cool basketball life. Jim Jackson joining us here from Westwood One. Hey, enjoy the games coming up Saturday and Monday.
Baby.
I always love our conversations,
okay.
Man.
All right.
Thanks
have
so much.
One.
Jim Jackson joining us this morning here on CBS Sports Radio. What an amazing odyssey for Jim throughout college basketball and the NBA. I mean, think about that. That to me is going to be one of the best, if not the best interview that we do here for Radio Row these 2 days, because think about what we just hit. 91 UNLV, 92 Fab Five, Calipari with the Nets, Iverson as a young buck with the Sixers, Alonzo in his prime in Miami, Steve Francis in his prime in Houston, Steve Nash as an MVP in Phoenix, and Kobe in his prime in L.A. That is all players and teams that Jim Jackson either played against or with. Those are iconic names and players and teams. That is just so cool. I love that. 855-212-4CBS is our phone number. And college basketball's biggest weekend, first-timer Auburn battling Virginia, then another first-timer, Texas Tech collides with Michigan State. The Final Four coverage begins Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, with the winners battling for the NCAA championship Monday night only on CBS. When we come back, we've got Jason Terry lined up, the Jet, plus your epic fail from Radio Row in Minneapolis. DA, CBS Sports Radio, and standing by with your headlines right now, it's the great Andrew Bogish.
Live at the Final Four in Minneapolis, exclusively on CBS Sports Radio.
And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. The David Irving comments from yesterday have now really blown up. You've got the voice of the Cowboys, Brad Sham, weighing in. You've got former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels weighing in. David Irving yesterday here on the show, former Cowboys defensive tackle, said that he felt in his dealings with Jason Garrett that Jason Garrett was uncomfortable with people of color. He said Jason Garrett was not a racist, but he did feel like he was uncomfortable with people that were different than him, including people of color, and that he was socially awkward. These comments have obviously now gone pretty viral. And again, I think many people on Twitter got it twisted a little bit that are reacting to this. If all you listen to is a 45-second snippet of David Irving talking about Jason Garrett, I think you're missing the larger conversation that we had with David Irving. I found him largely to be very thoughtful and engaging, thought-provoking. I thought that he came off as a guy that wasn't just about burning weed. He wasn't just about smoking up. He wasn't just about getting high. I thought that David Irving came off as pretty thoughtful in a lot of ways. And so I see there's a lot of hate for Irving, and there's a lot of hate for his comments about Jason Garrett. But that was just a small snippet of what his conversation was with us. And I would encourage anybody that is perhaps tuning in today to hear my reaction to this because they saw this on Twitter or listened to this on social media or read about this on some type of website to listen to at least a little bit more. It was a 20-plus minute interview. And if you don't have 20 minutes to listen to, I understand. I highly encourage you to try to find the 20 minutes because it was wide-ranging and it was about a lot more than just Jason Garrett and his relationship with Jay Garrett. It was about the use of marijuana medicinally to ease pain. It was about mental illness, which he's been diagnosed with, bipolar and schizophrenia, he said. It's been about his background and what he saw growing up and his years and career in the NFL and a lot more. So that was the David Irving interview from yesterday, which is available iTunes, radio.com, our website, cbsportsradio.com, and plenty of other places. Our next guest won a national championship once upon a time in March Madness. He was playing in the NCAA tournament in the NCAA title game in 1997 when the Arizona Wildcats cut down the Nets with an epic Final Four run. He was also the NBA Sixth Man of the Year and an NBA champion, the Jet, Jason Terry, joining us here on the show from Radio Row. Jay Terry, good morning. How we doing?
Good morning. I'm excited. I'm here at the Final Four getting ready to celebrate. It's going to be a good weekend. We got some good teams in the action.
No doubt.
But I am here embarking on my coaching career with the NABC. And we got the NABC All-Star game coming up here Friday. So very excited. We got practice last night. We'll have another practice today. And just excited to see some of those seniors. You know, you hear about the one and dones, yeah. And the seniors never get talked about. So, you know, we're going to see some of those guys. I got Chris Clemens on my team. I got my two juniors out of Houston, some surefire shooters. I got a Pac-12 boy in Sharma, who I'm looking forward to coaching. So it'll be fun. And I'm going up against our old friend Nate Robinson, so you know I got to get bragging rights and get the win.
How much of Lute Olson is in your coaching style?
About 85%.
85.
When you talk about accountability, holding guys responsible, and then, you know, the in-game execution, I think that's one thing that Lute prided himself on, was going into every game prepared. And then putting responsibility on his guards. I mean, it was named Point Guard U for a reason. And he gave us a lot of freedom to play out on the court. But with that freedom came a huge responsibility. And so, you know, that's what I teach all my guys and girls who I coach.
How about that 97 Final Four? Because you had three heavyweights in it. You guys, North Carolina, and Kentucky. You beat the defending national champion, Kentucky Wildcats, the national championship game. You beat UNC to get there. Those are some massive heavyweights, especially in the late 90s.
Well, I like the way you put it, heavyweights, but I wouldn't have put us in that category. We were more of the Roy Jones Jr. of our era. We were more of the
pound for pound.
Yeah, the pound for pound, and we were the lightweights moving up. We finished fifth in the Pac-10 that year. And so, I mean, for us, we were just excited to be in the tournament. We knew we had a good team, but we didn't really know how good we could be. Kansas was number one all season. North Carolina had Antoine Jameson, Vince Carter. Kentucky were champions before the previous season. And so, you know, for us it was, man, can we get out this first round? I mean, we had a tough first round matchup in South Alabama. Then we faced College of Charleston, who had only lost. As a matter of fact, they were undefeated that season. And so, you know, those were two tough matchups. And then we faced Kansas.
They were
in
awesome.
The Sweet 16. How many
awesome.
Pros did they have on their team?
Oh.
Paul Pierce, Rafe LaFrenz, Scott Pollard, Jock Vaughn was a heady point guard. And a Hall of Fame coach in Roy Williams. And they had knocked us out my freshman year in the Sweet 16. And I remember the tears we shed in that locker room. Because, again, that team that year, we thought we were going to the Final Four. Reggie Geary, Ben Davis, you know, we had a talented squad. And so, you know, playing Kansas in the Sweet 16 and knocking them off, that was really our championship game.
Really?
But the job wasn't done yet. We faced Providence in a knockout drag 'em game in the Elite Eight. And then we get on to the Final Four. And, I mean, you said it, heavyweights. I mean, Carolina. What a game. Comes down to the end. I actually was stricken with dehydration in the waning minutes of that game.
Really?
I didn't see the final outcome. I watched it in a hospital bed with IVs hooked up to
no
myself.
No way.
Yeah, it was crazy. So make sure I got hydrated, slept in my uniform, got ready for the championship game two nights later, and the rest is history.
Jason Terry joins us here on Radio Row. Now, at that time, you have an 18-year-old DA, myself, living in the sticks of New York State, and you had a big Arizona Wildcats fan in me, because I loved how much fun you guys looked like you were having throughout this entire tournament. And Kentucky was, you can't beat Kentucky, and you can't beat Kansas, yeah, and you can't beat UNC, and you guys kept knocking them off. National championship game comes, and we have a power outage, a big windstorm comes through, and we got no TV. So I'm listening to you guys on the radio, back when we all had radios, and I'm next to it's next to my ear, and I'm pulling for you guys, and I can't believe this thing is going to overtime,
yeah,
and you're trying to take down the defending champions. And I just thought that you guys played with such a joy back then, that I was such a huge fan. When you think back, how much happiness and joy was there within that locker room in that run?
Well, playing 19 seasons in the NBA, winning an NBA Finals, right? That is the ultimate. And the emotions, the feelings you have when you reach that pinnacle are second to none. But I tell you what, the only thing that can equate to that is winning an NCAA championship. Because, again, you're 18 years old. You're the last team standing. The road it took for you to get there. The many times you watched Georgetown, Michigan, Carolina, Indiana, all those historic great teams and the great legends that played in these games, and now you are one of those kids playing in that moment. I remember like it was yesterday. I had a steal with seconds left, a chance to heave it from half court, and if it goes in, I'm a hero. I missed, but we went to overtime and we knocked down free throws and we carried that trophy off. But I mean, it's a night that you will never forget. Lute Olson's wife, Bobby, rest her soul, she was there. The smile on her face, it always resonates with me to see Lute in his shining moment, that song playing, the video playing in the background, seeing my mother and father, who didn't really have a relationship, sit together and share that moment in one of my greatest moments was just phenomenal for me.
Wow, tell me about that. So your parents didn't really have a relationship, but they sat together during the Final Four?
Yeah, I was a single parent household. My mother raised me, one of 10. I'm the second oldest. Father was in the picture, but he lived probably about 45 miles away. So I only seen him, you know, rarely on weekends. And they just didn't get along for whatever reasons. But when I got to college, I told Coach, I said, I don't care what you do. This whole tournament, I want you to seat them together.
Really?
And lo and behold, every game they sat right there, and they were forced.
That's
They were forced to have to communicate and talk. And just to see them share that moment with me in the end, and we hoist up that trophy was definitely phenomenal.
That is amazing. Jason Terry joining us here on Radio Row from the Final Four. He's getting his coaching on in the NABC All-Star Game. You excited about it?
Oh, I'm very excited. I mean, I'm a coach at heart. This season, since I've retired, I've been doing work with Turner, NBA TV, Yahoo Sports, and I love broadcasting. I went to broadcast you courtesy of the NBPA, but I also went to the NBA Top 100 coaching program. And so I've been coaching grassroots basketball, women's and men, for 15 years in the Dallas community. It's been incredible for me. You know, being hands-on, being able to empower, enlighten, and educate the youth and show them a path to success is something that I relish in. And so I see my greatest impact at being a coach at the Division I level. I've also had on-the-job training courtesy of my mentor, Jason Kidd, the last 2 years. I've been in every film meeting, every coaches meeting, and I've actually conducted a couple practices. And so, you know, my preparation has already begun. I've also can share this with you now. I interviewed for the UAB job.
Wow.
4 years ago.
Okay.
When the Final Four was in Houston.
Okay.
Didn't get the job, but I've maintained my level of determination that one day I will become a Division I coach in the near future.
That is so cool. Jason Terry's an NCAA champion. He's an NBA champion as well. Coach of the NABC All-Star Game coming up this weekend. That was so, so cool. And as you're watching at WatchDA.com, Jim Jackson giving him a big old smooch on the top of the head. It's a good kiss.
Jim Jackson with a good kiss. My rookie year, Jim Jackson was my veteran in a locker room with Jim Jackson, Isaiah Ryder, Dikembe Mutombo, and LaPhonso Ellis. I mean, what a dream come true for me. These are guys I watched. Jim Jackson at Ohio State, you know, all the battles he had against Michigan, Michigan State, Sean Respert and the boys, Fab Five. I mean, LaPhonso Ellis, what a career he had, and Mutombo at Georgetown. So these are guys I watched growing up. And so I'm like a kid in a candy store. Anything they said, I did. You know, some things I shouldn't have, but you know, some of that was Ricky Hazen. But, you know, just a kid in a candy store, man. And guys like him are the reason why I do broadcast. You know, I've watched his career and how he's transitioned after basketball. And he's always been a professional. And I always idolize that about him.
Jason Terry joining us here on the show. Jay, it is awesome to finally catch up with you, my man. Thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you.
Best of luck. Jason Terry joining us this morning here on the show. That was awesome. And, yeah, if you were just listening on the radio, Jim Jackson comes over and just gives him a big old fat kiss on the top of the head as he's doing the interview. Phenomenal. All right, let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. Mraz, I had to find him food last night because the hungry fella was real hungry. Here's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Yesterday, we sign off the show at noon Eastern time, wrap up some stuff at the studio, and then have to catch our flight from LaGuardia.
You want him to ride horses down to Deegan out of the game, too?
So we decide, after Mraz announces that there's a one-hour delay, why don't we get some lunch around the office? So we hit up a Chipotle.
Marsha, eat a Snickers.
Why?
You get a little hostile when you're hungry.
Something that if they shut down, you would die without their burritos.
What better than just getting a hounding burrito bowl right in that belly before you hit a plane?
I just want to be drowning in a Victor Cruz touchdown with pulled pork all over my face.
So we do this, and then we get in the Uber, and I recognize something because I'm an idiot, that we are not on the same flight.
Ah! Ah!
No,
your flight was delayed. My flight was not.
Look, life is timing.
So now we have to get a rat race and drop you off first because, frankly, what you did is worse than me with the saltwater freshwater.
I don't know if it's worse, but clearly my mind was elsewhere. I just assumed we were on the same flight. We were not, and I'm an idiot.
It was a ragtag team. It was like the Bad News Bears meets the Little Giants.
Now, luckily, my flight did leave 45 minutes after yours. Luckily, I didn't have to check a bag, and luckily, I've got TSA pre-check. And so
you made it by the skin of your teeth.
And the only thing that's kept me around is my effort.
You're still delayed, though, so I get in about an hour and change before you, hour and a half. I check into the hotel. We were actually staying at the Mall of America. There is a Radisson Blue, very nice hotel, connected to the Mall of America.
Swanky, I believe, is the word they use.
So we're actually living, staying, sleeping, breathing where the Pepper Palace is with Death by Salsa.
We have a shared room.
I'm at the downstairs bar having a beer watching some of the game last night, and I'm like, you ready to go? And you are hungry.
I'm hungry. And not only this, you tell me to make sure I put on good shoes and a good shirt. I only packed two shirts for the shows.
Yes.
I'm actually wearing the same shirt I had to wear last night.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Excellent, epic fail. In that vein, I want to update you on the women's bracket challenge, the one spicy moment, because as soon as we're done here, today we are heading over to the Mall of America to get our Death by Salsa from the Pepper Palace for the punishment of who loses the women's bracket. Now, right now, Pete the Body Bilotti is in first place amongst the guys on the show. He's in fourth. He's got UConn winning the whole thing. Myself and Bogish tied for ninth right now. A kind Sir Andrew Bogish also has UConn winning. I've got Notre Dame cutting down the nets. Andrew Kaplan, a.k.a. Cap at WatchDA.com, is at number 17 in the standings. He's got Baylor winning. Mraz and Huge Freeze are bringing up the rear. So right now it's a Battle of the Bulge 2.0. Mraz has Baylor as his champion at number 29 overall. Huge has Notre Dame as his champion at number 40 overall. The loser of this bracket must eat Death by Salsa using nothing but peeps to scoop it up, wearing a pink Easter Bunny outfit while handing out Cadbury cream eggs to the sales department. We will keep you updated on all comings and goings regarding the women's bracket. Thanks to Tom DiBenedetto on the Wheels of Steel, Sean Mraz on site, Andrew Kaplan and Andrew Bogish back at the studio, and James Boccioni as well, helping out as well. We'll see you tomorrow from Radio Row. The Mothership disconnects.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.